across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the state of Wisconsin Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's a beautiful day up north and everywhere across the state, all over the Civic Media Radio Network, where up north is our favorite state of mind, no matter where we are. It's Thursday, August 17th, 63 degrees up here in Chippewa Falls. Folks in Waukesha listening to the Shaw, you have 64 degrees there right now. Madison, 68. Wisconsin Rapids, 61. Green Bay, 67 degrees. Been watching that line of thunderstorms move across the state slowly but surely. First moved into the far northwestern part of the state around 8, 9 o'clock last night and just marched in a tight diagonal line throughout the night, only getting into Milwaukee to Beloit about an hour ago and is just about now getting through the rest of the state. It's a cold front that is going to have things a little cooler this morning while we're on the front end of a new high-pressure system. But as we get into Saturday, we're going to be on the backside of that high, and it's just going to start pumping hot air from the south over us all weekend. Lots of sunshine as well. Full details from Jennifer Vucicki in about an hour. Here's what's on tap this morning. President Joe Biden made an appearance this week in Wisconsin's largest city, making his case for re-election. Next week, the battle for Milwaukee continues as the Republican presidential candidates come to town for a debate. Will Donald Trump be a presence? Joe Zepecki says yes, even if Donald Trump isn't actually on the stage. We'll have that conversation at the bottom of this hour. We'll also review how a Republican state senator in the Wausau area is attempting to use the courts to shut down an independent newsroom for reporting on his use of a homophobic slur that he has acknowledged is not out of character for him. Something similar has been brewing up in the Minocqua area. And the recent raid of a newspaper in Marion, Kansas, is yet another reminder that America's extreme right wing talks about cancel culture to keep you from noticing that's exactly what they're doing in real life, trying to cancel newsrooms and other voices that would keep them accountable to the public. We'll talk about Wisconsin attorney Kenneth Chesbro, who hasn't spent a lot of time here lately, having all but gone into hiding since the violence of January 6th. But after being indicted this week in Georgia, more is being learned about the so-called brains behind the fake elector scheme. Kristen Lyerly joins us for Hometown Health at 7:30 and highlights the work being done by the Climate Change Commission, the Climate Change Coalition of Door County, and the one activity you can do to have an impact on a climate in need of your help. Along the way, of course, the phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You can email us, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. If you're watching this as a live feed on one of several places across Facebook, you can put a comment in there. We may see it and put it up on screen. And again, in terms of that studio line, that's also a text line. You can text that number or you can text us through the Civic Media app. Again, 844-967-2789. Those calls are received by and those texts are read by one Aaron Zommers, who's down in Madison for us this morning. Were you still asleep as the storms finally rolled through there?
I believe so. It's hard to tell. Unless it's really storming, I don't really hear the rain much from my room. But I know when I looked out the window, it was wet.
The last thing I remember before falling asleep was, you know, just seeing the flashes of lightning. Couldn't really, you know, just the thunder was still very distant. And I thought, well, if it's serious, it'll wake me up, you know, or I'll wake up in a, you know, on a tree limb or something like that. But it clearly it wasn't. It was just a nice garden variety thunderstorm that carried on through. And, you know, we could really use just a little bit more rain that way. So especially if we're going to get a nice weekend this weekend, and it definitely looks to be hot and nice. I wish I had more plans for it, but I guess maybe we should just take one of the few remaining summer weekends as they come.
Oh yeah. Last weekend, I didn't have to travel anywhere for once. It was so nice to just stay home.
Oh yeah. I did the same thing.
This weekend, I'm going to Manitowoc to celebrate my youngest sister's 21st birthday, which makes me feel old, even though I'm not that much older than her.
It should. You know, you heard me yesterday. I do the same thing now when people turn 65. And I think we have somebody along those lines in the birthdays today as well. But yeah, it used to be 21 for me. Now it's 65. But, you know, that's just kind of the stage of life that I'm in these days. We also, I should mention, have merch. I'm going to be asking Dr. Lyerly if I don't forget to ask her. But we've got our Up North News t-shirts of all types. Go to upnorthnewswi.com. And I'm sure people are going, wait, you've been holding these t-shirts up and blocking the microphone for days now. Aren't you going to wear it and model it? Well, here's the thing. They sent the size that I want, but you and I both know that whenever you buy a shirt, and if you were to get, you know, let's say you either get a medium or a large. If you get the one thinking it might shrink, it's going to be too big. And if you buy the other, it's going to be too small. And so the size I got here, this is super big right now. And I just know that I need to wash it. But this has this feel that even though it's too big now, when I pull it out of the dryer, it's going to be the size of a paper towel. Somewhere there's got to be a happy medium for this.
Hopefully that's where it ends up. But I guess we'll see.
If not, it's kind of an expensive car wash rag. But I'm hopeful that when we do laundry today, I'll have something that I can really show off to folks. So again, you can look for that at upnorthnewswi.com. Click on shop up in the top banner and wear some merch. We'd appreciate that. Hey, we have headlines to go through, including the Brewers playing out in Los Angeles again against the Dodgers. So stick around for that and much more. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network on this Thursday morning, when you're here, you're up north. We'll be back.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome with us Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young.
It's getting to the point where I'm no fun anymore.
That is Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young singing at Woodstock on day three of the festival, 55 years ago today. We'll have more in our history lesson and music break coming up a little bit later on this hour. The LA Dodgers have now won 10 games in a row by beating the Milwaukee Brewers again. Last night's score was 7-1. You know what didn't help for the Brewers? Five of the Dodgers' seven runs came with two outs. The Brewers' lone run came on a Mark Canna solo homer, his first with Milwaukee, as he led off the second inning. Wade Miley went five innings. He gave up four runs on seven hits. He struck out two and he walked two. Wade Miley drops to 6-3, with two of those three losses coming against the Dodgers. The Brewers will try to salvage the final game of the series tonight, then race down to Texas for a weekend series tomorrow, starting with the Texas Rangers. You can hear those games across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network if you're in the Fox Valley. That would be on Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3, 1100 AM, or News from the Center, WRCE and Richland Center, 107.7 and 1450 AM. All right, now to some headlines as we unpack the news. You can react to them. You can vent a little about them. You can share what else is on your mind by calling or texting us at 844-967-2789. Or you can comment on our Facebook Live video feed. You can send us an email. You can use the Civic Media app. Plenty of ways to weigh in on things that are happening in the news that we're going to tell you about here, starting with Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf, who is still the Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator, even though her term has expired. And we've reviewed why that is the case. She gets to stay there, thanks to Fred Prehn doing the same on the Natural Resources Board, and conservatives at the time saying, oh yeah, we want Scott Walker's appointee to stay. So, you know the old saying about, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So now Megan Wolf is still in that position, but conservatives don't like that. And so they're trying to find a way to fire her. But to do that, she would have to be nominated. She'd have to be renominated for a new term. And that would come from the Wisconsin Elections Commission itself. They would vote, and if 4 out of the 6 vote to renominate her, it goes to the Wisconsin State Senate, and then they vote on the nomination. Well, Republicans in the State Senate have already said if they get her renomination, they will not approve it, essentially firing her, because they see her as the scapegoat for what they continue to say are irregularities about the 2020 election. There were no irregularities in the 2020 election. Megan Wolf did a fantastic job. Wisconsin elections continue to be safe and accurate, and she continues to properly defend the work that she and 1,800 clerks all across the state of Wisconsin do. So she's being seen as this scapegoat. The Wisconsin Elections Commission talked about this yesterday, about whether to allow her to testify before a state Senate committee about renomination. Well, hang on, Pat. You just said she hasn't been renominated yet. That's right. The Wisconsin Elections Commission members have not renominated her. The 3 Republicans on the commission put forward a motion a few weeks back to renominate her and send it on to the state Senate where she'd be fired. The 3 Senate Democrats, the 3 Election Commission Democrats said no, they're going to abstain. They're not even going to vote. And so that led it with 3 votes to nominate her, not the 4 that are required. So there is no renomination to go to the Wisconsin State Senate. And yet, Republicans controlling the Wisconsin State Senate held a vote without any notice, by the way. They just sprung this on everybody late one evening during a session. And they said, we're going to hold a committee hearing on whether Megan Wolf should serve another term for the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Democrats on the Senate floor said, you can't do that. There is no nomination. And they said, well, actually there is. You know, she was approved by the Wisconsin Elections Commission on a 3-0 vote. You know, it was unanimous. That's not what the rules say. The rules say it's got to be a majority of all the commission members, 4 votes. And there weren't 4 votes. There were 3. There is no nomination. But yesterday, the Wisconsin Elections Commission had to talk about it because this state Senate committee is going to sit down at some point and they're going to want to talk to Megan Wolf. And so the Elections Commission was talking about whether to approve or disapprove, what kind of instructions to give Megan Wolf as to whether she should testify to that Senate hearing or not. And of course, the commission remains deadlocked 3-3. So there was no vote on whether she should testify, which means that without clear instructions from the commission, it's entirely up to Megan Wolf to decide whether to testify before the very Republicans who are basically trying to rig the process again just so they can fire her. Wolf said, it is a really difficult spot. I feel like I am being put in an absolutely impossible, untenable position either way. Well, she's been in that position because she continues to be the target of all these conspiracy theorists who falsely claim, and I would add, parenthetically, falsely knowingly claim, falsely, that she was part of the plan to rig the vote in 2020. They know better. But the Democratic members of the commission have no interest in going along with this farce. As one commission member, Ann Jacobs, said, Megan Wolf is the chief elections officer of the state of Wisconsin. I have no interest in babysitting who she speaks to. And she's right. Jacobs went on to say that they, the senators, the Republican senators, do not have a nomination before them. I don't care what they said in that resolution on the Senate floor, she said. I don't have any interest in indulging the legislature circus, which is based on a false reading of the law. Now, one of the Republicans, Don Millis, the chair of the Elections Commission, said that if Megan Wolf declines to appear, it could worsen an already tense situation. He says they're probably going to hold a hearing anyway. We've already seen what's happened when we didn't approve her nomination. I think that turned out very badly. So this is Don Millis saying, Ooh, you guys are going to be in trouble if you don't let Megan Wolf come talk to us. She's in trouble already because of this imaginary nomination that Republicans in the Senate have put up. So the next step is to wait and find out, you know, whether there is going to be this hearing, when it's going to be, whether Megan Wolf testifies, and whether this committee holds an imaginary vote and then moves it on to the full state Senate, and do they have an imaginary vote on a nomination that doesn't exist? And then if that passes, what do they do then? Do they go to court, much like people tried to do when Fred Prehn wore out his welcome at the Natural Resources Board? Well, back then, Fred Prehn had four conservative justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. It's now controlled by four progressive justices. I have a pretty good idea how they're going to rule based on past precedents. Now, you may ask, as somebody in the political middle, is that right? Is it a case of two wrongs equaling a right? Somebody else can debate that. Right now, we know that precedence has been set by conservatives, thanks to Scott Walker and conspiring Republican legislators. And I will ask, as I've asked many times before, why is it that people on the left always have to be the ones to disarm first, to roll over first, rather than saying, okay, this is how you want the rules to go. How about you abide by the rules that you set and we go that way? If you want to have peace talks, that's fine. If you want unilateral disarmament, that's another situation entirely. The New York Times brings up a story yesterday out of the Wausau area, one that I will acknowledge not being fully familiar with until it was all laid out here in full and ugly form by Jeremy Peters. And it's all about an independent news site called the Wausau Pilot and Review, and the legal trouble that it's in because of its reporting on a county board meeting in August of 2021, when it reported that multiple people had heard about a business person in the meeting, the owner of a shredding and recycling company, who referred to, and I'm going to warn you, there's language coming up here, who referred to a 13-year-old boy as, quote, a fag. That owner of the shredding and recycling company's name was Corey Tomczyk, or Tomczyk. He is now a Republican state senator, having been elected last year. He has denied using the slur. He has demanded a retraction. But three additional people who were in the meeting gave sworn statements that they heard Mr. Tomczyk use the word. And during a deposition for this lawsuit, he has admitted having used the word faggot on other occasions. He just says he didn't use it here, even though multiple people at the meeting said that he did. The defamation suit should not have lasted this long, but as it continues to last and as the legal bills pile up, the Wausau Pilot and Review, which is something like a 3 or 4 person newsroom, is in jeopardy of folding, which is just the kind of thing we saw happening in Marion, Kansas over the weekend, where some good old boys managed to talk a judge into issuing some kind of a search warrant rather than a subpoena, raid the newsroom, taking its hard drives and other materials. The 98-year-old co-owner dropped dead over the weekend from the stress of it. And now a judge or a district attorney has said, well, there's really nothing to this search warrant. Let's put it all back. But you can't put that toothpaste back in the tube. In this case of trying to intimidate a newspaper that in that case as well was reporting on a business owner who did not like what they were hearing and tried to again use the legal system. And then there's kind of a perverse twist on it up in Minocqua, where it's the newspaper, the Lakeland Times, a far right-wing rag, if you will, my opinion, that is actually the newspaper is suing somebody for libel. They're suing small business owner Kirk Bankstead. They're suing him for defamation, I should say, and trying to drain him. in something that it's known as a slap lawsuit. You know, basically, it's one of those ways that you try to sue somebody into submission. Stands for strategic lawsuit against public participation. If you go up to the Minocqua Brewing Company Facebook page, you'll hear all about it. Kirk writes about it all the time. And fortunately, he's got insurance and he's got people donating to his legal fund. But the Wausau Pilot and Review does not have that kind of protection. From somebody who is now a Republican legislator, who ought to acknowledge he's used this slur before, might have uttered it again, and it's not a good look for a Republican legislator to try to silence a newsroom. Back with Joe Zepecki after this. You're up north. It's another Thursday morning here on Up North News Radio, which means we get to visit with our friend Joe Zepecki and review some of the headlines of the week. There have been one or two that touch about Wisconsin news and politics. I think you'd agree, Joe. This one was not counted as a slow news week.
Remember when people thought August was when it was like the slow news period? That was fun.
It was. I remember those days. They were awesome. Fridays used to be like slow news days. Now everybody dumps their garbage on Fridays. So here we are with more than a couple of stories to talk about. And of course, the Georgia indictment is the big one, not just on its own merits, which is enough. But, you know, if you do the word search for Wisconsin, you're going to find more than one or two mentions. And it some of it is familiar ground, but, you know, some of it raises some questions as well. Like, you know, were there people in Wisconsin or entities who were, you know, more into this conspiracy than, you know, than maybe we otherwise appreciated? Is that a good way to describe it?
Yeah, more questions than answers. Mm-hmm. You know, the long running festering question has been, is there an investigation into the fake electors from Wisconsin and the people who helped them assemble, like Republican member of Congress Scott Fitzgerald apparently played a role in assembling that crowd? So there have been a lot of questions. And, you know, Attorney General Call has said, listen, the Wisconsin Department of Justice does not confirm or deny the existence of any ongoing investigations, which sounds to me like there's still a possibility. We've also seen in Jack Smith, the special counsel's indictment of former President Trump, that they appear to have evidence showing that at least some of the states who had fake electors, the Trump team, the Trump conspiracy, lied to those fake electors. That might be a distinction without a difference politically, mm-hmm. but in a court of law, it could make a big difference. And so those have been kind of the questions that were swirling around. Now there's new questions, right? The current Republican Party chairman, Brian Schimming, is all over this indictment. The Wisconsin memo drafted by Attorney Cheesebro is all over this indictment. And so I think it is appropriate for Mr. Schimming to answer questions from the media. So far, he has not done that. And, you know, one of the questions that I would have is whether the Republican Party of Wisconsin, which election after election these days is getting outspent by the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, is the Republican Party of Wisconsin paying any amount, significant amounts, a ton of money on legal bills for the chairman to respond to inquiries from investigative bodies like the Fulton County District Attorney. So there's a lot of questions here. There are not a lot of answers. You know, Mr. Schimming, to be clear, has not been indicted. He is not referenced as an unindicted co-conspirator. But this is a very, very serious set of charges. It's a RICO case, where there were overt acts in furtherance of a conspiracy is what is being alleged, and which a grand jury in Georgia agreed that there was a probable cause to bring charges. So this is serious stuff. And it is my hope that Mr. Schimming is transparent and candid with the public about what he knows, what he told investigators, and with any luck, then we'll be able to move on.
And look, when it comes to, you know, how the Republican Party of Wisconsin spends its money, I could see people saying, well, you know, why should we care? It's, you know, it's their own organization. They can do with it what they will. But I seem to recall now a past controversy where a PAC supporting Donald Trump was essentially using county Republican parties to get around campaign limits. I think that was for the primary involving Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. And some Republicans, some county officials were very unhappy to find that, you know, the way that that money was being funneled through the party apparatus. And so it is a matter that not just progressives, not just Democrats, not just liberals and independents, but I would dare say there are going to be some fellow Republicans saying, wait a minute, I give the party money to get people elected. What's really happening with my donations?
Absolutely. And one of the things we know about the Republican sort of infrastructure the last few election cycles is they've been spending fewer hard dollars to communicate with voters. They've been leaving more of that to their super PACs and the independent expenditure groups. And that means that they can't communicate as efficiently. It means that dollars go further for Democrats. And, you know, you can buy five ads for the cost of, say, two ads with that other type of money. So again, this is their party and they can do with it what they want. But I do think that there's some public interest in a little bit more transparency into this. Now, listen, when this trial gets underway, there's going to be a lot more transparency than there would be in the other in felony indictments that Mr. Trump faces, because cameras will be in the courtroom. This will be a very, very different reality for the American people. And we don't know when that's going to come.
No, and we don't know who all will be, you know, called upon to testify or who will be deposed and whether there will be Wisconsin ties there as well. And I think so long as we're talking about this entire fake electors part of the scheme, there's going to be the possibility of that Wisconsin connection. And I would also add that there have been a couple of Republican apologists, bloggers and tweeters who, again, go back to the notion of, well, even the mainstream media reported back then that it was, you know, just a legal contingency. Well, yeah, because they're just saying what they were told. We didn't know there was this whole, you know, possibly criminal conspiracy back then, or that would have been reported on as well.
Yeah, if the robbers tell the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, we didn't rob that bank, and then the Journal Sentinel reports, the robbers said they didn't rob the bank, that doesn't mean you can point to the Journal Sentinel coverage and be like, see, we didn't rob the bank.
It wasn't a robbery. No, it does not work that way. All right, so we've got dueling media appearances in the Milwaukee area when it comes to the 2024 presidential campaign. And President Biden this week, to his credit, was not going to surrender all of the Milwaukee media attention. So he made an appearance there this week, but also one well timed out for the first anniversary of the Inflation Reduction Act, which now, again, time for a personal editorial, again, was probably the right name at the time because inflation was still a concern. But now a year later, Inflation Reduction Act just doesn't say to you, oh, historic investments in clean energy and keeping down prescription drug costs and everything else. But that's all in there. And so that's what he got to talk about this week. And I'm sure plenty in Wisconsin liked to get that presidential attention.
Yeah. I mean, listen, what we know about the Inflation Reduction Act, whether you call it or not, is that it is the most significant healthcare reform in this country since enactment of the Affordable Care Act. And we know that it is the most aggressive and largest investment in the climate crisis in our nation's history. And so this is a big win in the first year since its enactment. We are already seeing the impact. There is more impact to come. Now, what does that mean? Some provisions, things like a $35 a month cap on the cost of insulin for seniors on Medicare, that's already in place. That went into effect 8 months ago on January 1st of this year. Other benefits for seniors on Medicare, like a $2,000 cap annually for your out-of-pocket costs on drugs, that goes into effect in 2025, a little bit later. We are about to enter the first round of negotiations. For the first time in 30 years, Medicare will be able to use its bulk purchasing power, the same kind of power you or I get to use to our benefit when we go to Costco or Sam's Club, to to negotiate for lower drug prices. For 30 years, there was a ban on that. That's going to impact the cost of prescription drugs for seniors on Medicare. So some of this is already in place. Some of it's coming online. At the end of the day, what we know is it's going to drive down healthcare costs. On the climate side, we know that getting shovels in the ground, building some of these large utility scale projects, it just takes time. And now that the Inflation Reduction Act is law, it is changing the economics of those projects and making it much more likely that union workers who are paid a living wage, who have built-in protections to ensure a safe workplace, to ensure they have a voice in their workplace, and to ensure that they could retire with dignity after a lifetime of hard work, are the ones building and developing and growing our clean energy economy going forward. That's all to the good. We're going to see a lot more of that type of impact in the months and years to come. This is these tax credits are in place for a decade. The president's visit to Wisconsin, of course, was to Ingeteam, which is a manufacturer that makes electric vehicle charging stations. The Biden administration is pledging to do 500,000 charging stations across the country. Ingeteam will have a role to play there. They also make the motors that power the turbines on, big wind installations. So this is American manufacturing. This is changing the economics of the climate, of the clean energy economy, and it's going to be good for Wisconsin workers. That's a win-win-win-win-win.
And union workers, because the president was introduced by a local member from IBEW, who rightly described President Biden as the most pro-union president that we've had, and that makes a lot of workers happy.
No question.
All right. Now, having made his mark in Milwaukee, it's time to turn the festivities over to the Republican Party candidates, which may or may not include Donald Trump when they're debating in your fair city in just a matter of days here. What do you think the headline's going to be when it's all said and done? Might involve Trump, might not, might involve something they said instead. Right now, Mr. Soothsayer, if you were writing the next day's headline, what do you think it's going to say?
Trump looms large. Whether or not Mr. Trump is on that debate stage, he is what this primary election on the Republican side is all about. I think the numbers I saw today, he has a 40-point lead nationally. There's just no comparison when you look at the leads that the Republican favorite or whoever was ahead in the polls had in 2016, 2012, or 2008. Guys like Romney, Giuliani, which is kind of hard to look back at now, were up by a couple of points. Trump in 2016 was up by like 10 points, a 40-point lead. There's no parallel for this. And so we have a Republican Party just kind of going along as if everything's totally normal and this is every other nomination fight, when the far and away front runner to be their party's nominee is currently facing more than 100 felony charges across four different jurisdictions. It's just sort of astonishing when you stop and think about it that way. And so whether or not he's on the stage, Trump's going to be the story. Because if he's not there, the questions are going to be stuff like, if Donald Trump is convicted of any of the 78 federal charges he faces, will you use the power of the presidency to pardon him? And some of those candidates are probably going to say yes. And others, like Chris Christie, are going to say hell no. And they're going to have it out. And they're going to be asked questions like, are you willing to say what President Trump did poorly in his first term? And they're all doing this delicate dance of, are they actually running for vice president, or are they really running to knock out former President Trump? So the story's going to be about Trump. I wish that wasn't the case. I really genuinely wish it wasn't. But for the moment, he is the 8,000-pound gorilla that rules everything in the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm. I've got 1 minute left, so let me come back to the Inflation Reduction Act for just a moment, because you do a lot of work with Protect Our Care, and there's some new polling out. We've talked about what's in it, but you and I have discussed previously that too many Americans don't know what's in it, but the polling on what people think when they learn what's in it makes it pretty obvious why this thing is going to be around longer than its first birthday.
No question. When you look at critical independence, plus 8 above water is where the Inflation Reduction Act comes in. We know that the most popular provisions right now are the healthcare provisions. I have a sneaking suspicion that as time goes on and people begin to see and feel the impacts of a greener energy economy, that stuff's going to catch up as well. It's a popular law. If you want to know more, go out there and find it. There's lots of content available to learn about the Inflation Reduction Act so you can tell your neighbors and friends and they see what President Biden and the Democrats in Congress have done for this country.
Very nice. Joe Zepecki, as always, thanks so much. Have a great Thursday.
You bet.
When we come back, Dr. Kristen Lyerly will join us and confess to hijacking my boat yesterday. We'll find out how that cruise went. Coming up next, you're up north. Term bubblegum rock, we're talking about some of the songs from like the 60s and 70s, but this is clearly bubblegum as well, which means it's sweet and you get kind of addicted to it. And that's what Katy Perry had on this day in 2011. Kristen, it was 2011.
Yeah,
it was a dozen years ago already.
Don't think about it.
Katy Perry hit number one on this day in 2011, making her at the time only the second artist to have 5 number one singles from the same album. Her album was Teenage Dream. The only other time somebody got 5 number ones from the same album was Bad by Michael Jackson.
Also, The Dancing Shark.
Remember The Dancing Shark. Yes, yes.
Don't forget Left Shark.
Left Shark. how do you plead to commandeering the Kreitler pontoon on Lake Wissota yesterday?
I commandeered the cooler. Craig was actually driving the boat.
Okay. I'm now going to claim the two different ways that I was highly embarrassed yesterday and that and that Kristen has become such a good friend that I can even talk about these things on the radio. First, it was rather spontaneous, and I did not have a chance to clean the boat before you got there, and that was rather embarrassing, but you were a good sport about that. And I knew the next time I was going to take out the boat that I had to put gas in it. And you guys did that. And I'm very thankful you did not have to do that. But thank you. Because once upon a time, there were like 5 gas pumps around Lake Wissota. Now there's 1. So I know how much you paid for a gallon of gas. But I hope it was worth it. I hope you had a fun time.
Oh, it was delightful. And it was an experience. So well, thank you for that opportunity.
Well, good. I'm glad you guys had fun. On this day in 1945, Animal Farm by George Orwell was first published. On this day in 2008, swimmer Michael Phelps became the first person to win 8 gold medals at 1 Olympic Games. The number one song this day in 1968 was by the Rascals. All the world over. That was 1968. On this day in 1969, which was 54 years ago, not 55 like I said earlier, this was day 3 of Woodstock with performances by Joe Cocker, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Blood, Sweat & Tears, and Country Joe and the Fish, who performed their famous Fish Cheer. And that's really all we can say about it on the radio because it wasn't the word fish that they were spelling out. Here's another senior citizen from the rock and roll world, from the Go-Go's, Belinda Carlisle is 65 today. And now I'm trying to remember what year was Mad About You? 1986.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it was right after the Go-Go's had kind of sort of broken up. They, by their own admission, they had a rather wild time as the Go-Go's.
You know, Jane Wiedlin, Milwaukee native.
Yes, yep. Both went on to respectable solo careers. Look at this one.
And a starring role in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yes, yes.
Most excellent.
Most excellent. Donnie Wahlberg is 54 years old today. That'll make some people feel old. Robert De Niro, happy 80th birthday.
Whoa.
Isn't that something? He's been in so much stuff. I mean, just even if you set aside The Godfather, which of course no self-respecting American man can do, but he was in this movie with Anne Hathaway. Was it Anne Hathaway, The Intern? Where he was kind of this older worker, and Anne Hathaway was like this 20-something CEO or something like that. An amazingly sweet movie that I would highly recommend. And definitely helped. Robert De Niro helped me feel better about my advancing years. I'm like, if I can be that kind and gentle in an otherwise cynical age, he did a great job there.
When I think of Robert De Niro, I think of Meet the Fockers.
Oh, sure. Yep. I mean, the guy can do the full range. The number one song this week in 1974 was an absolutely forgettable number by a group called Paper Lace.
I heard my mama cry.
Was a song that was, I can tell you, as somebody who had just turned 10 years old at the time, it was everywhere. Mm-hmm. You can tell it's kind of a catchy tune, but it did not age well. You don't hear this on the radio at all.
But it just gets that nostalgia thing going in your
heart. It does. 10 years later, 1984, Elton John finished his latest world tour. He was fatigued, and he announced his upcoming retirement. This was 1984.
Okay.
I hasten to add. 40 years ago, he announced his retirement. All right. On this day in 2004, we're coming to another song from 1986. It was a tune from Bob Seger that had been used in Chevy truck commercials. And on this day in 2004, the venerable Like a Rock ad campaign came to an end.
Like a rock, I was strong as I could be. Like a rock.
I thought that was such a great choice of a tune for Chevy pickups for all those years. But it also, again, a great tune for, you know, men of a certain age who are, you know, looking back in time. Just, again, Bob Seger, highly, highly underrated in terms of, you know, the songs that he chooses or writes or plays, and this was a great one.
That song is so linked to Chevy in my mm-hmm. mind that I can't even remember the last time I heard it on the radio.
Yeah. So it was a 1986 song, first used by Chevy in 89, and they used it until this day in 2004. On this day in 1987, the Beastie Boys and Run DMC wrap up their Together Forever tour at Madison Square Garden. Run DMC was telling its fans to stay in school and avoid drugs. The Beastie Boys, for their act, had cage dancers and beer. So
sounds about right.
Sounds about, you know, on brand. And finally, on this day in 2002, the number one song was by Kelly Rowland and Nelly.
What's it gonna be, she said.
You don't know what you mean to
Come
me.
On.
It was Kelly's first hit for a Destiny's Child member outside of the group. And again, another little catchy tune.
Yeah, somebody else from Destiny's Child, I think, hit it big, too.
Yeah, eventually. You know, yeah, her name escapes me, but I think she did all right as mm-hmm. well. Yeah. All right, we've got headlines to cover in our next hour as well. We talk about Kenneth Cheesebro a lot, this Wisconsin-based attorney. We learned from a Washington Post profile yesterday that it's actually Chesbro, so we'll try to say it right, even though the title of our next hour is called The Cheese Stands Alone, because Kenneth Cheesebro has been pretty much in hiding since January 6th. So we will talk a bit about how he is mentioned in the new Georgia indictment as the brains behind the fake elector scheme. So Kristen Lyerly sticks around, has Hometown Health in our next hour as well. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin, you're up north. We'll be back.